This is Octave Leap. Innovation, regeneration, and human optimization.
Now, Natalie has requested since the beginning that I change that intro. It's just too much on the nervous system for conscious, sensitive individuals. And I am listening. Yes. Welcome back.
I was getting into the drumming. It's like really building me up for like, okay, I'm ready for this talk.
We're going somewhere.
Let's I don't know where, but it's going.
Welcome back to the Octave Leap podcast, everybody. I am joined here today with Natalie Saunderson, who is a yogi of 2 decades, and she's also consulted for many holistic businesses in Vancouver, Canada, and in Bali. And she joins me today to talk about a very, very pertinent issue, which is building a relationship with the 5-letter word that goes M-O-N-E-Y, building a relationship with money. Natalie, how are you doing today?
I'm good. You're really good at those intros.
Well, you know me. I'm just always full of enthusiasm and exuberance, even with, you know, this arm. Today was a good day, though. I was just telling her I got my bandage changed. I went for the off mauve color. I had a selection. Neutral. I could have done this one. I could have done a bland green, or I could have done a pale blue, but I chose this one.
Yeah. Mm, stick with the neutrals. They always go down well. Thank you for having me. Yeah, this is a huge conversation that I feel we both really, we love to explore. So I'll let you kind of figure out where we want to dive in and go from there.
Lisa, lovely to see you on the call. You've been a longtime supporter of the show. And yes, we hope to be very inspiring with this discussion about money today. Actually, we've got quite a few people on the call. So this was one that I think is a subject a lot of people really wonder about. And, you know, with money, we tend to see it one way, is that other people don't have much money and that it kind of defines their life and it sort of, they feel limited by it. Or they have a lot of money and they kind of get wrapped up into money and they become obsessed with it. And again, their life is dominated by money. So how do we take this thing? I know it's been said that money is the largest religion in the world because 8 billion people basically worship it. There's no way around it with our current economic system. Everybody has to be thinking about this thing at some point in their day-to-day life. So if this thing is so ubiquitous and so pervasive, what can we do as individuals to have a healthier relationship to it, allow it to basically not have a negative impact on our nervous system?
Well, I think the first thing to do, you know, is to examine the black and white beliefs that we have around what money is and how it works. Because most of us, if we're, you know, anywhere between over 30, we were kind of brought up in this very kind of structured black and white, this is the way to go towards your financial ambitions. And now I think there's a lot more people talking about the energetics of money, beliefs surrounding how you approach money. And the biggest thing that I feel that we've talked about a lot is that this is a relationship that you're having on daily, right? So if you're not aware of what the relationship is currently like, then it's very different to make any shifts about how you're either attracting it, working with it, or saving or holding on to it. It's like eating. Right. So we have to get kind of really honest about where am I at with interacting with this part of my life? Is it strained all the time? Am I subconsciously always worrying about it? Because that has a trickle effect. Right.
When I was in my 20s, you know, I've talked about this, but I was in different spiritual communities. And one of the themes that came up, and I like this theme, was that there's no point in learning how to do all the fancy stuff until you've mastered the domain of food, sex, and money. And in very many ways, these are themes that come up on a daily basis that are a lot of the time related. You know, if we look at the way that we're maybe leaking energy in our relationships with other people, we can see a balance with the way that we're, or, you know, a counterpoint to the way that we're leaking our money. And, you know, I've noticed this within myself. So I'm actually speaking from direct experience here, that sometimes when I've had challenges in relationships, I might be bringing in a lot of money, but at the same time, there's always some little trickle that's going out in certain areas. It's old subscriptions I didn't cancel. It's like an accident happens like this, and all of a sudden there's a large expense that shows up. So I think as we begin to clean up our life and our energy leaks, and basically, again, sort of that second chakra, as we build a container for that, then we begin to notice, hey, you know what? all of a sudden life is simplifying. There isn't as many leaks. And because there's not as many leaks, I don't have to think about building or generating as much because what I am creating goes a little bit further.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think when we say second chakra, that's also kind of like an interesting point to understand and unpack, because second chakra is like you're having things flow towards you and you're releasing them, right? There's a flow, and it has a lot to do, all three of those things, food, sex, and money, have a lot to do with nourishment when you really break it down, right? So where you feel like you're undernourished, generally speaking, I think it's often, you know, somebody that has contraction around having enough.
Yeah.
Having enough money, having enough support, having enough stability so that their well-being is taken care of. And for a lot of people, we don't realize that money has taken the place of relationships. You know, like that's kind of a foundational quality that helps people feel like they're okay. But what they're actually craving is a feeling of stability, trust, well-being. But we've also been under the influence of a certain kind of conditioning that's taught us if we have this much money, we'll be okay. Well, a lot of people get to that okay, whatever dollar amount, and discover that there's other things that they're still craving that money can't address, you know?
I want to comment on this because this is very interesting. It's like almost like some people get in this mentality of waiting until they earn a certain amount in order to address their self-care. In order to actually nourish themselves. You said that like these three things are about nourishment, right? So like if you're eating food that has a lot of nutrients in it and it's prepared with love and it's grown with love and it's fresh, it's like you actually need less of it. That food goes a longer way. You know, if even if you have a little bit of money or even if you're in debt, you know, I've been in debt before and I'm still like, you know what? I'm going to go out. I'm going to get that massage. I'm going to go and I'm going to buy that yoga membership. I'm going to go to the sauna. And guess what happens? Is that things rebound and you feel inspired. You still feel abundant despite what the bank account says. And the other thing I want to say too is that money in the way that it flows into our lives can ebb and flow. And if you take a look at people who have over the period of their life, you know, developed a healthy relationship or had large amounts of wealth in a healthy way, they'll often tell you that sometimes there's periods of time where there is a contraction of the actual what's in the bank account. You know, it does fluctuate. You know, and there's periods where businesses fail, periods where like 100%. Things look really dire. And guess what, though? It's like it is exactly what you're talking about, is if you always make sure that you're nourishing yourself and you're not getting into that contracted state around it, you can come out of that trough much easier than if you start to limit yourself, because that would perpetuate a downward spiral, right? Because then when you contract, then there's less money coming in. You're also contracting in your being. You're telling yourself you don't deserve a certain amount because of an external factor.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's so many good things to what you're saying. So what happens, so that people understand what this energetics of money is about, is when you contract, that isn't just, you know, the way you experience money. If you're in the position where you're offering services or a business, that contraction or that stress of how your finances are doing translates, right? So when we're speaking to other people about, they have the sense of like, if we're really like driving, you know, we all know what that feels like when people come towards us trying to sell us something instead of you're in a place where you feel there's like a deep trust and a flow in your financial life that you don't need to grip. And people can feel that. And when you're interacting in a sense of whatever the business is that you're in, you definitely want to be aware of how you present what you offer and the value of what you present and what you're charging, because the more confident and clear you are in what you're charging, the easier people relate to it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, go ahead.
There's this part of me that feels like what we're actually addressing is the subtle underlying needs that people have that we've kind of projected onto these different areas of life. Like if we just find that person that gives us love, like that's going to be enough forever, instead of understanding that we can ultimately source that sense of abundance. We can create a healthier relationship. And food is another really important one that you mentioned, because we can be eating really healthy food, but if we're still stressing about it, or we're still in a space of dieting or, you know, judgment, that actually, they've proven, affects the rate of digestion, right? So it's like you could be having a lot of income flow towards you, but if you're constantly contracted, chances are you're not managing it well, you're not enjoying it, you're not increasing it to the maximum ability that you could be. So it's interesting. It's a lot more nuanced and layered than just knowing you have an income coming in. It's how you work with it.
I'll speak from experience. You know, there's been times where I've earned large sums of money, and there's times where I've earned less money. And I agree fully with you. It's that I've noticed sometimes when I earn large amounts of money and there's that contracted state, I don't actually get to enjoy it. It's like the mentality shifts. It's like, even though I'm dealing with 10 times more than I was dealing with last year, it's like the brain starts to make excuses for why I can't show myself some self-care, why I have to keep going. Or maybe there's just some conditions. Or maybe there's some conditions like, hey, I'm working on this job that takes up a lot of my time now. And then what ends up happening is it doesn't sustain itself. Then all of a sudden conditions change quickly. And that thing that we were chasing that was thinking that we're going to get us somewhere eventually disappears. And then we find ourselves in a very different circumstance. So the thing that I've been playing with recently is, how can we bring in what we need, but do so in a way that causes the least amount of harm or stress to our system and actually increases our capacity to take care of ourselves? And that's been the theme that I've really been looking at, because I'll be 100% honest, things took off for me this year with my business, and they're off to the races. There was a lot of income and there was a lot of energy expenditure going out, and that culminated in this. You know, I had a motorcycle crash at the beginning of May. I was going too fast. I was working way too much. And it put me in a position where all of a sudden overnight, I've got like huge medical bills. I've got to pay for multiple motorcycles. I can't really work like I was before. And I went to sleep and I'm like, what am I going to do? And I had a dream to just basically be vulnerable and ask my community. And so many people that follow me, whether it's the podcast or on my email list, actually just showed up. And I like, it's almost like divinely guided. I would have had, I didn't really ask anyone. I didn't go knocking on doors. I just sent out a couple emails and people showed up to support. And so it really stretched my capacity to receive money and allow myself to be supported so that I could actually drop down from a very busy, frantic, hectic state into one that's mental.
I watched that process, and I think that a lot of people can relate is when they do start to become more responsible for larger amounts of money, you think that that would take the pressure off. But I've worked with a lot of people through the years of teaching yoga as well, and it actually seems to somehow bring more complications to the table, you know, like how they're investing it or what the right amount of enjoyment is for these. They feel a sense of responsibility, which actually doesn't utilize money the way that money wants to be basically worked with, right? Like money, this example of having the dream and knowing that you wanted to receive, well, that's a big topic that we also are going to be peeling back, is this worth piece. Like, are you fully open to receiving large amounts of money, or do you not somewhere in your subconscious mind think that that's possible? Right? Because you cannot build anything and grow if you don't think it's possible. And
yes,
we've been carrying a lot of conditions around money. It's pumped at us, you know, in these mainstream media sources about the economy or, you know, the right way to make money, and then information that's always making us actually feel like we need to hustle and be smart and quite quickly, right? It's always a sense of urgency. And because of that, it doesn't actually help people tap in and realize, okay, well, I have a unique relationship because I have a unique energy with money. What's the best way for me to situate myself? What are my skills and services? What is my lifestyle? What are my priorities? So I think that it's really about helping people get closer to what it is they want, what it is they offer, and figure out that sweet spot. Right? Because if we go out and chase something, chances are that's going to perpetuate. We're going to stay chasing it. And lots of people spend their whole lives feeling like that, you know?
Have you ever heard of Richard Rudd, or the owner of the Gene Keys, creator of the Gene Keys, Seven Myths About Money? Have you ever heard of that?
No. What is it? Okay. Gonna, like that article he wrote?
It's very brief. It's not long, but I'm going to read you the first one. Prosperity leads to simplicity and wealth leads to complexity. The beauty of prosperity is that it makes your life lighter. It invites you to shed weight, the weight of opinions, the weight of low self-esteem, the weight of seriousness, the weight of all that extra stuff in your life that takes up so much of your valuable time. Cultivating prosperity, therefore, involves a simplification of your life. This is the opposite of wealth, which increases your baggage, your responsibilities, your worries, and the amount of time you must spend keeping all those balls in the air at the same time. Contrary to popular belief, wealth makes your life more complicated on all levels.
See, I think that'd be true unless you prioritize a way of enjoying that process, right? Because again, it's reminding me of the second chakra themes, the second chakra, loosely put, for anybody that doesn't know the second chakra, I mean, energy moves in and out, as we know from this area. Food moves in and out. Toxicity moves out. Sexuality, that's an easy one, moves in and out. And so when we can appreciate the money that we have and we can allow it to be this enjoyable process, that's a very different frequency of what working with your money than looking at the spreadsheet, not letting yourself, restricting yourself here, restricting yourself there for some potential future that may happen, but it may not. Right? So it's always keeping you just outside of being embodied in what you're doing with your money. But I agree with him. And I think there's a couple of common mindsets, which we'll probably go into more in our workshop, but where we step into the stream of money, most people have a few similarities, you know, in terms of how they're feeling to begin with. And a lot of us come from not enough.
Yeah. It's interesting what you say though, because like we can often try to approach it intellectually of like how to get ourselves in better shape financially. If I make the right spreadsheet and I restrict myself here and I increase the income over here, I'll slowly sort of like creature my way to where I want to be. But what you described there is the whole thing is underpinned by a frequency of limitation and restriction versus, you know, when you feel that natural sort of pulse of abundance in your body and you get excited, even if you don't have much money, if you can
appreciate it,
you appreciate it. You have gratitude for it. You can feel it coming your way. What that does is that begins to influence your thoughts, which then change your micro decisions you make on a daily basis. When those decisions change, opportunities appear. And you also, you see yourself being navigated almost effortlessly in a completely new direction.
And again, this is the nuances of the energy, right? So when we understand that how we're thinking, even if it's subtle, if we're always having this underlying worry permeate our financial life, or here's the other example, you're always having a relationship that you're worried about. That energy, even if you're not saying it to the other person, is still present and obvious, right? Yeah. And same with food. You can be working out, you can be taking care of yourself, you know, in all the right, you can look at the nutritional value of everything, but if your energy is locked into control and worry, then that's going to translate into how you feel ultimately.
Yeah.
So
you ever tried calorie counting, Natalie?
A long time ago.
How long did that last for you?
I was very good at it because I had a period in my life where that was about abstaining from food, right? But I realized through that it wasn't actually food that I was abstaining from. It was pulling myself back from energy. And like you just read in the Gene Keys, Richard makes a good point. It's like to be able to hold more energy, you know how you need to know how to hold it lightly. You know, if you're trying to hold it, like with money, and people are, some of the most wealthy people in the world are actually quite frugal. And to me, that's an imbalance, you know? So when we talk about money, we're also talking about shifting the whole paradigm around money and how we how we use money, how we share money, how we interact with money and each other. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure nobody looks at like Warren Buffett or Bill Gates and be like, man, like I want to be just like that person in every way. It's like, you know, you look, see these people who are wealthy, quote unquote.
But that's where some of these beliefs are challenging. You have to reframe them because then we carry the idea that wealth is, we don't like wealth. It's subconscious. But if we see people that have a lot that spend freely, we can create the association that wealth is selfish or wealth is unhealthy, you know? So what we have to be careful about, like, what are our beliefs around money?
Yeah. I think, you know, a lot of people I know that have a big heart that want to see positive change in the world, they see the people that are most visible with a lot of wealth, and they see that oftentimes they, you know, there is one way to acquire wealth, which is through, you know, at any cost. And in our society, our society rewards people who try to accrue wealth at any cost. And as a result of that, what we end up getting is we get sort of these people who can muscle their way through, and they will get there through sheer force and volition, but they sacrifice a lot of themselves. They sacrifice their emotional body, their connection to other people, their sense of compassion, their sense of well-being. And what you end up with is, yeah, I've got a lot of money, but, you know, I've stepped on a lot of backs to get here. And that's the thing that people look at.
I've spent all my time working for it, you know.
Right. And that's those are the examples that we see most obviously. And so people tend to assume money equals looking like that, but it's not true. You know, especially living, you know, I've lived in Bali, in Australia, and South Africa the last 6 years of my life. And, you know, I've met a lot of people who they become sort of location independent, and they're able to craft the life that they really want to live so that they can think clearly and that they can envision things and they can actually create new solutions that are very purposeful, and their lives are actually enriched by this amazing quality. And like you said, it's almost like I watch them. They're generous, they're compassionate, they're present, but they touch life very gently.
Well, I think that's a really great point, because we need to understand that there is actually quite a bit of money circulating in the world, but we're taught that there isn't, right? There is a lot of money circulating in the world. And some of the people that I know have a lot of money don't necessarily need to showcase it. They can be anonymous donors for things. They can share it within their circles, but they're not the ones usually splashed on the cover of magazines. And so it's important to, like, most of us, as we know, for our belief systems have been developed when we were younger, right? Very impressionable, thinking about how to move in the world, but they actually never evolve unless we choose to look at them. Like, is this still valid, or is this actually limiting how I interact with this part of my life?
Right.
If I have the association that people are selfish who have a lot of money, then obviously that's not something I'm going to necessarily want to feel about myself. I don't think I'm selfish. So these are the things that, like, are really important to, I had to do this as well as a yogi, you know, the infamous, I value things that aren't just about money in my life, until I hit a point where it's like, this actually isn't serving me anymore, right? It has to be balanced. Like, your life has to feel like it's interacting with and supporting the other areas of your life, ultimately.
Yeah.
Not running and not in deficit, right? So it's like this healthy relationship is for each of us, I think, to understand more about how we tick and what we need or what we want.
Yeah. I remember in my 20s when I was still, you know, I worked a career as a engineering consultant, and you know, it was a professional role, so I made, you know, a decent salary doing that. But it took up a lot of my time and a lot of my mental bandwidth. And I remember I had friends, because I was also into spirituality, I was also into people that were alternative. And I'd go to their house, and they didn't make anywhere close to as much as I did. But I was looking at them, and I'm like, wow, they have much more abundance in their life, because there's this spacious quality. They're doing what they want to do. They never ended up going into a role where they had to fit in somewhere and compromise themselves. They just did what they want. And there's this elegance to their home, to their sanctuary, to their well-being, to the way that they carry themselves. There's a dignity in their life that transcends the amount that they're bringing in or the amount that they might have stored in their bank account. There's just this easefulness to it. And the other thing I want to say too is that there's a lot to be said for touching things gently. You know, I think of slacklining. Are you familiar with that that sport? You lived in a rock climbing town in Spam.
Stephen from my kitchen. I was like, what the hell are they doing? I never fully understood it, but yes.
Yeah. So, well, slacklining is a good example. And I mean, I used to rock climb. I used to rock climb. I used to do it at the gym just more for the for an exercise of balance, because that's what it is. But you know, you can't just forcefully step. You can't forcefully bring yourself, because you're trying to walk on a very thin rope that's basically held quite taut. But when you step on it with, you know, a body weight, essentially the rope begins to shift and bend. And so what you need to do is touch it as lightly as possible and kind of keep that center line of balance as you're moving along this rope. And so the only way to be successful with it is to move in a flow and move as steadily, but also as lightly as possible. And that can be said for many things out there. You know, as a guitar player, oftentimes when I was teaching students, I taught guitar for about 15 years of my life, students would go and they'd go to play something and they'd expend too much energy and they'd be too forceful in doing it. And then I'd go and I'd show them and I would just do it and it would be more relaxed. So when you get more relaxed with something, you're actually able to do the thing more proficiently. Now that is true for money as well. If you're tight around money, if you're mentally thinking about it all the time, if it's at the forefront of every decision that we're making, what ends up happening is we're gripping it too tightly. It's like you're trying to basically stomp on a slack line, or like the guitar example, you know, you're trying to play with too much force and it sounds pretty terrible.
It just starts to take over. You know, when we think about the amount of things that we have in our life we're middle-aged. Isn't that funny when we say it out loud? But we are middle-aged. We have children. We have relationships. We have our happiness. We have our health. We have our need for rest. You know, we have our need for enjoyment. We have our friendships. And I think that unconsciously, a lot of people think that if they just focus here for a while, like on their financial well-being, somehow they'll find that open meadow where it won't be as big of an issue. But what I think it actually does is anything you focus on expands, and then it can quite easily take a lot of energy from the other parts of your life if you're not attentive to it.
I'm going to pose a question for people that are here right now. I love asking this question. And the question is, what would you be doing if money
wasn't an issue?
But not an issue. Okay, so I'm going to feel free if you're in the chat right now to give a response in the comments, or if you're watching this later, just consider the question, what would you be doing if money were not an issue? And the reason this is beautiful is because we have this past conditioning, identity. It's a complicated thing. And it's like when you put your iPhone headphones in the pocket and you pull them out later and it's all tangled up. There's all sorts of different things. There's different generational influences, like environmental, societal, all this kind of stuff in there. But at least when we consider this question, at least in that moment, we're removing the hooks of the complexity that money has played in our lives, in our parents' lives, in the societal exposure that we've had. And it frees us up to imagine a life that begins to connect us with a future version of ourselves that might be a little bit more free and might be a little bit less bound by that conditioning. We've got some comments here, so I'm just going to take a moment. We've also got Lisa. Lisa's all over it today. Lisa would be setting up.
I like that.
And what else would she be doing? She would also have a loft conversion and travel. Wow. So for Lisa's perspective, you know, life would be, you know, it wouldn't be extravagant. You know, people think you have to be extravagant, but for her, it would be rich with all the things that she loves doing.
And then the next piece would be, is there anything that you can do now, right? Is there anything that you can do now that doesn't keep it, like you're not interacting with that vision?
Yeah, because I mean, you know, if somebody said, what would you be doing if money were not an issue? And let's just say, you know, they were, you know, a student or something, and they were kind of living frugally and said, wow, if money weren't an issue, you know, I'd travel to the moon or something like that. Well, it is possible, but there's a little bit of a gap between where you currently are and where that vision is. And, you know, of course, when we enter the realm of imagination and creativity, things can happen fast, but we also have to respect that gap. Right. And we have to acknowledge the size of that gap, because if it's very far away from us, it may take longer. Now, what you said is beautiful. What can you do today? And so, you know, I ask myself, if money were not an issue, the first thing I think of is, well, I'd have a little bit more time in the day because I would choose to work less. And with that time, for me, I've restarted my meditation practice recently, and I'm like, I'd take a little bit more time for meditation in the morning. I would probably go and check out, you know, a couple more events of interest where I live, because I live in sort of a cool part of Bali.
Mm-hmm. Where there's every kind of event you could ever want.
Every kind of event you could ever want. Many of them focus around the second chakra. That's been a theme.
This is true. The other thing is, I think that when you start to interact with that gardening element or finding people that share that passion, it perpetuates the belief and the feeling in your system about what that would feel like. And it becomes more tangible, right? There's a lot of beliefs around manifestation, but it's actually being aware, like you said, David, of the distance, but also feeling into that energy before it's actually arrived is, for me, that's really important to how I make things happen in my life. I start to think about them. I don't grip. I don't get on, you know, detailed. I just start to think and let myself percolate ideas and maybe, you know, looking into them or something like that. And that generally starts the knowing. Is that what I want? Is that not what I want?
Yeah. I think I have my biggest life lesson around money between the May 2022 lunar eclipse and the May 2023 lunar eclipse. Literally that year. Was the most
till next year, just so you know.
Yes. So I'm gonna say this because I know a lot of people have followed me from my cryptocurrency days. And if you remember me in those days, I was impassioned about decentralized finance. And I got really into crypto too, because it was easy. It was like, wow, you know, all of a sudden I could just do this thing and make a lot of money. And then I got really into figuring out all these intricacies, and I thought it was pretty smart because I was like earning yield and moving it around. And I had all this interest, and, you know, we were earning the quote unquote unicorn of passive income, and, you know, just basically riding high on this. But I didn't check the fact that I was actually energetically quite disconnected from this, because I rationalized, well, this is all about financial freedom. This is all about being outside the banking system. This is all about this. And, you know, there's a lot of people that were around me that believed the exact same thing too. And what happened in May of last year was when you have those blinders on, sometimes you can't see the cracks or the faults in the system. Mm-hmm. And what I realized at that time is that actually in this environment, there's a lot of greedy people that are doing shady things. Mm-hmm. And one of the largest cryptocurrency sort of protocols collapsed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the holes in the system began to show in the investigation afterwards, but it was messy. You know, in one day, I lost lots of money, and so did a lot of other people that were with me. And it was like a freeze effect in my nervous system. I had people calling me and being like, Dave, what do I do? And I'm like, you know, I'm just trying to get through this. And I noticed that this huge sort of event, you know, it actually had power over me. And in that moment, I realized a lot of the things that I couldn't previously see about this relationship with cryptocurrency, this relationship with money. And that, I think, I want to just talk about now a little bit, because, you know, crypto for a lot of people was this idea of financial freedom, but at what cost? And that was sort of the big lesson that I was unpacking from that lunar eclipse last year. And what transpired after that was, you know, I'm like, well, you know what, I'm going to not turn my back on crypto, but I'm not going to focus on that exclusively. And I'm going to get back into the thing that really matters, which is building this business that will actually help other people actualize their dreams in this world and work in a creative way where I can show up and build stuff with people alongside them. And it took many months. And over that period of time, you know, there was a lot of effort on my end to put things into place, but nothing was really working out. Not until, like, I remember November of last year, and I was sitting and I'm like, you know what? I've kind of almost like exhausted my runway here of, like, you know, finances. I've got a family. We're moving to Bali and all this stuff. But I still feel excited. I still feel hopeful. I know around the corner something's coming, but I can't see it. And, you know, it was kind of like, you know, the 11th hour. And here I am. I'm like, let's throw a toga party at the 11th hour and make something,
sounds, you know, like it's you.
Yeah, that's Dave's exuberant sort of way of dealing with
it. Go out in style if we're going out. But you make a good point because, again, when we're talking about money and energetics, building a relationship has to, if you want to expand where you're currently at, you have to move into the zone of what you haven't done before. And with money, you have to be very aware of what you're actually trying to control because it's a flow. And so I think both you and I are equally invested in helping people understand how to do the inner work so that their relationship with money can be reciprocated. Because a lot of people try to, like you could have said, this doesn't look good. I'm not going to pursue it. Mentally, I can see the numbers. But you went into your body and you said, I feel there's something here for me to continue with, right? There's this momentum of purpose. And we've talked about this a lot. Like money likes a prerogative. It likes a direction. It likes to be used and it likes to have purpose. And so where we've come from in the world, you know, there's a lot of people, like you said, that can push things through because they step on maybe some values and, you know, they underpay their workers. And this is what we're coming from. But it doesn't mean that that's actually the most potent or, you know, I feel and I see that there's a lot of other ways that money can be used, worked with, and attracted, especially when you give it a lot of purpose, when you give it an avenue, right?
That's the thing, too, is that the root of the word currency is current. So it is a flow. And in this case here, I want to unpack this a little bit more because during that 8-month period, it was actually a consolidation. There was a consolidation of energy, of current building and upwelling, and it had to basically break a levee. This is happening internally, but literally the next month after I said, you know what, I'm going to stay in this excitement, I'm going to stay in this abundant frequency, the next month the levee broke and all of a sudden out of the woodwork came really amazing ideal clients. And the business basically just took off like a horse at a horse race that goes from like standing to galloping. Now, of course, that brought a whole new realm of challenges. I had to manage time, manage my personal energy. And that's sort of what kind of happened after the accident is now I'm like, I'm forced to. I've got one hand to type with and it's not this one. It's this hand over here, which is my offhand. And so I've got to manage my energy now. So it is this process of refinement. And I also want to say, too, I don't think it has to be as drastic for everybody. Not everybody has to reach the end of the runway. Not everybody has to have an accident or an injury to have these realizations. Hopefully, we can catch the universe's warning signals when they're just basically like a, you should do this, not a, you should do this, or do this now, or a boom. You know, it's sort of like if we aren't listening or we tune out a little bit or we think we're smarter than life, then what ends up happening is life will just get louder because it's on. It's going to be the one that wins in the end. It's like we have to realize
that. I find that all the adversity that we have and the lessons, whether it's the whisper, the tap on the shoulder, the little bit louder, or the boom, ultimately all those challenges are asking us to be more embodied and more in our alignment and more in a healthy relationship to whatever it is that's trying to get our attention. Right. So if it's working too much and taxing your physical body and the rest of your life is getting, you know, the whatever amount of energy you have left over, then that is going to eventually come to a head. And that's in every aspect of your life. But a lot of people will also have that kind of approach to their health or their relationships or, you know, and so it's really synonymous that the energetics that you work with your financial well-being trickle out and affect every other aspect of your life. Right? Every aspect of your life.
What practical advice would you have for a person that's just beginning to examine their relationship with money?
Start to watch your thoughts. Start to watch your thoughts. Start to, there's a really great woman that I started watching and she's maybe not for everybody because she's quite, she's got her own personality and she talks a lot to women and manifestation in particular. And her name's Manifestation Babe, but she created some really interesting ideas in my thinking 2 years ago, which was money isn't good or bad, right? So money isn't, it's what we, the meaning that we give it. And when we start to understand that it's not ours, and we loosen that grip. So start to watch when you, for instance, pay your bills, or are you stressed about something, or this creates the energy behind, if you're contracted, you cannot possibly access any other creative ideas around how to make money or draw money to you, or, you know, have things support you that you weren't expecting or seeing or anticipating.
Huh. Another interesting one that kind of reminds me of, like, watch your energy when you're paying your bills. Mm-hmm. Another one that was, gratitude. I remember my 20s. Yeah. When I was in, you know, a spiritual mentor once said to me, she's like, watch the way that you brace or you move or your posture, your energy is when you're going to pay for something.
Mm-hmm. Hugely.
In that moment of making a transaction, what's actually going on if you took a snapshot, if you just went stop and you mm-hmm. said, I'm going to stop right here, right now, and take a snapshot of everything, not just how I'm postured, but my energy, my thoughts, my emotions.
Mm-hmm. So one really helpful thing is to also, when you are paying for something and it's a large amount, to really be appreciative that you can, that you trust that, that something's going to come in to replace it, because it is like money's like that, right? So instead of just thinking, oh no, I'm going down, which is a contraction, and oh, stress, when's the next part of whatever, it's to be thankful and grateful. And again, it's even if you don't have a lot of money, still do this, because that expands your ability to stay in a space in your nervous system, in a space in your beliefs around money that you trust, right? You're not going to be dropped off at the next cardboard box. Very few of us are, you know, unless you need that big bam in your life and the cardboard box. But generally, yes. Most of us do not have that experience.
Yes. I think that's a great one too.
Oh, like, that's awesome, Lisa. I like that. Did you read that?
I like paying forward. Yeah.
You know, and that's a beautiful one too. Sorry, David, just reminds me of in Bali, you know, we have such a wide range of economic realities. You know, we have mm-hmm. people that earn very little, and we have people that earn a lot and are basically in the playground of Bali. And absolutely, that's one of the most beautiful ways, even if you don't have a lot, like how can you perpetuate it, right? How can you mm-hmm. share? How can you appreciate? And so I always pay certain people, you know, that I'm really grateful that they do my laundry or whatever, a little extra. It doesn't mean that I need to be, you know, exponentially abundant in my bank account, but it's that appreciation, you know, and that creates an energy. That's great.
So number one, watch your thoughts, watch how your energy is when you're making a transaction. Because even that process of observation begins to actually change the outcome from our conditioned patterning. Mm-hmm. Second thing is experience that gratefulness for whatever you have, because there mm-hmm. is dignity in your life no matter what you're doing. If you're listening to this 100%. Podcast right now, there's some area of life where you're dignified. And if you realize that and you embody that, you're going to begin to naturally expand it, because you're placing your attention mm-hmm. there as opposed to all the things that might
abundance.
Be not your liking. Exactly.
Yeah, you are abundant. It's everywhere.
Okay, we never stop at two recommendations. Can you make a third one? What's the third one, Natalie?
The third one is to see money as something that you are meant to enjoy. And I know this is going to probably seem so wild, because it took me a long time to get to that place where the idea of seeing money as something that you can play with and enjoy creates a different shift in how you go about it. So even if you're someone that likes, say, spreadsheets, and you really like budgeting and like having things all very laid out, play with that, right? Because when you play with that, it's not an area of your life that you're trying to control the same way. It's exactly the same as in a relationship. And you're like, okay, we need to deal with this issue that we've had for 3 years. And you both, you know, this is my side and this is, but when you bring play into it, like, it's a different energy, right? It's an energy that actually wants to get creative.
I got a funny story. So after I was in the hospital, you know, there was a lot of money going out for things. And then there was also a lot of money coming in from all the amazing donations that I received. Also too, a couple clients just came out of nowhere and gave me large sums of money to do projects. But I didn't really know how much had gone out, how much was coming in. And I went home to use my computer to like try to do my budgeting, and my screen died on my computer. So I had to use a backup one. So I couldn't even access my like super like techie, like budgeting spreadsheet. And I've had to go the entire month with no idea of finances at all. And I'm like, wow, I just feel like I'm having so much more fun not sitting there and cerebrally keeping track of everything and being like super organized with it. And I'm not saying be disorganized and I'm not saying be irresponsible,
but try that out.
Right. Mm-hmm. Because like what Natalie's saying, it's like sometimes those spreadsheets, and I know from experience, I've kept meticulous budgeting spreadsheets since I was about like 20. And mm-hmm. I can also tell you the trap that that can create because it doesn't allow this other nonlinear, creative, expressive, playful force to come in and say, mm-hmm. all right, two-night vacation, let's just go. Mm-hmm. I'm not even going to think about it. Because if we have the spreadsheet says, well, actually, the place I want is an extra $50 over what I've allocated in my budget for this. And I'm not going to feel good about it because I'm going to pay for it and realize I'm now $50 over budget. And it's like, it comes into this like weird
sort of. And then you've got a contraction again. You've got a contraction that it doesn't fit into my. But on that note, we always want to address, because there could be people out there with a different mindset, which is what I want to go into in our workshop. Because there are several ways that we're all entering this relationship. And so for people that only play with money, or say they only really assume it's always going to keep coming in, then stretch your capacity to work with money differently. So then maybe you step into a spreadsheet. Maybe you step into like more discipline and a container, because that's helping you learn that there's many ways to interface with money. And you're probably going to learn something through, how does that feel? What does that experience bring up in me? You know, what is it actually tied to? Because it's actually never about money. It's usually tied to how money makes us feel.
Well, isn't life like, if you look at it, right? Like the way I see it is, any idea sort of has two polar opposites, right? So you have people that play too much, and you have people that are way too calculated. And so you have to identify where on that spectrum you lie. And if you're somewhere close to the middle, then maybe this is already in balance for you and probably already have a healthy relationship. But if you lie towards one of these ends of the spectrum, you know, that might be an invitation to try to counterbalance it. Because it's like a seesaw. If you sit on one end of a seesaw, the other one goes up. But as you move closer to the center, the degree to which the other side goes in the opposite direction is less and less and less.
Yeah, I feel like when you enter that center zone in any area of your life, then you can decide if you want to expand. That's when you can, like, because you're not tipping off balance. You have a good relationship, a good attitude, I guess a good approach, maybe some tools or some routines that you have supporting that. But then you also kind of understand, okay, I have a trust. I've built a trust in this area of my life. And that's when we can meet people and really help them become a little bit more directed with where they want to go with that. Do you want more of that? Right? And that's kind of the foundation you need to have to increase what you're able to work with.
Right.
Because then it's not going to tip you off. If you make a large amount the next day, for whatever reason, you know, it's not going to tip you off that balance. It's not going to throw you, but it does throw a lot of people, you know?
So just to recap, because, you know, I know we're talking pretty fast about a lot of different things, but there's three things we've talked about here that are gold. Number one is Natalie's first thing that she said, watch your thoughts, watch your energy when you go to make transactions. Number two
when you receive money,
right? That's an important one too.
Do you feel like, oh, that's too much? That's super important too, right?
Yeah.
Give thanks.
Second thing though is be grateful, pay it forward. Like Lisa said, you know, because that will begin to expand that thing that's already in your life. And then the third thing is, yeah, I think the important underlying concept is finding more balance. So if you're too rigid and regimented with your finances, move on the direction of being more playful. If you're too playful and you're too loose, move in the direction of doing a little bit more budgeting. But you want to find that middle area. And I think when those three major things happen, you'll notice a cleanup and you'll start to basically hit a much more intuitive, clear relationship with money, where you'll figure out what you need to do next. And I think that's a beautiful part. It's like, you know, you do like the course clearing in the beginning, and once the wreckage is out of the way, you can kind of see the situation a little bit more objectively, and that you can then begin to source the answers from within yourself, and, you know, maybe not have to rely so much on what other people are saying, which is always important because we mm-hmm. have our own relationship, yes. our own journey to take with this.
Yeah, that's a really good point, I think, to kind of sum up with, is that to make sure that whoever, I actually just had a session with about this 2 weeks ago, about her financial life and how that was being influenced by a few people. So she was kind of not really sure. And I said that, you know, we have these impressions through other people's opinions or their insight or their expertise, or maybe they're a banker or an investor, whatever it is. But you still have your own navigation. You still have your own wisdom. If it doesn't feel right, if it doesn't, even if it makes sense from their perspective, right? If it doesn't feel right, chances are it's not the right direction for you. Mm-hmm. But we also have to be aware of the beliefs that maybe are influencing that feeling too. So, you know, it starts by just understanding what we're carrying a lot of the time.
Yeah. I think, you know, you've said this many times, but, you know, energy never lies.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
Energy always kind of speaks to the truth of things. And I just want to kind of touch on this because this is really pervasive, especially in the online world, where people are very focused on the number of figures. And I intentionally don't talk about figures that often, like six figures, seven figures, eight figures, mm-hmm. because the way that I see that is it ignores that underlying energy completely. It's like, how do you mm-hmm. get the figures? What is your well-being? What is your, are you doing something purposeful? All of that is thrown out the window, and it basically becomes, how much money can I make? Which firmly mm-hmm. entrenches us and symbolizes we're sitting in a transaction-based economy. And when we're in a mm-hmm. transaction-based economy, very little of us shows up. Very mm-hmm. and very little of the people that we transact with shows up as well. It's basically, you buy this product, I get your money, that's it. And I will say things and I will speak to you in a way that basically entices you to buy the thing, to give me as much money as possible so that I hit my figure target, and that you complain as little as possible. You don't basically, like, you know, ask for a refund, that type of thing, so that I can perpetuate this cycle. Now, that's okay if that's where you're at. And mm-hmm. if you're thinking along those lines, maybe think, ask yourself, how much of me is showing up? How much mm-hmm. the things that I truly value is showing up? How much do I see other people involved in this equation? Mm-hmm. Because if that starts stretching you a bit, you're already starting to move in the direction of a completely new economy, which is the economy of care. The economy of care is when we're infused with our passions and the things that light us up and enliven us. And we're like, I'm doing this because I truly enjoy it. I love it. And it gives me new insights. It gives me new ideas. It puts me into deeper communion with other people. And as a result of that, money is a side effect. And when I interface and I share this with other people, I want them to experience a similar amount of appreciation and love and enlivening in their own system. And therefore, you know, I mean, we can get caught in the trap of overdoing, but we're just doing it out of genuine care and genuine appreciation and love for what we're doing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think money loves to be used and money loves to be appreciated. Money's an energy, and like any relationship, you get to dictate what that relationship feels like ultimately.
Right. So are we treating money like a number that is
it just
part of a
tool?
Transaction-based economy? Yeah.
Is it
this thing? Or is it this thing that's
can perpetuate so much more intentional action in the world and abundance. And it's when we start to look at it differently, instead of just meet my needs, which again is very survivalistic, meet my needs, you know, make me feel safe, make me feel this way, it changes. Because when we shift from that to what can I do creatively with this money? How can I use it to perpetuate my passions, other people's passions, my well-being, other people's well-being? That's an energy that's not even about money, but money can help perpetuate that. And that's something that we don't talk enough about, I think, in the way that the world moves, because we're kind of been taught and we've fallen in love with doing things faster, you know? Yeah. And that's, unfortunately, something we need to undo a little bit.
Well, and that's why you want to get my new ebook, How to Make Seven Figures in 30 Seconds. I'm just joking, of course, because that would fly in the face of everything we've talked about on the show. I would never write an ebook like that because, well, essentially, it's about doing things fast. And it isn't about just quantifying things. It's actually tapping into the underlying energetic quality of the thing and allowing that to take the time it needs and knowing we're going to be supported in that process.
Well, yeah, and I think that the energetics of money, things can still happen fast, but we have to let go of that gripped nature, right? We have to let go of needing it to look a certain way or happen in a certain timeline.
And it's kind of like in Bali. It's kind of like in Bali.
Time doesn't exist.
Yeah, like
because we live on an island and every day is its own little like vortex. It's definitely an interesting place.
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, you can't expect a tip. If you expect a tip, it becomes a very, you know, contracted dynamic. And that happened to me recently where there was a guy delivering me food and, you know, it was like, I think it was like 70, and I gave him a $100 bill and I said, you know, just give me back 20. So I was going to give him a tip. And basically he hands me like a 5. You know, it's just like, you know, he's just like, no, I want more of a tip type of thing. And I'm like, okay, whatever. So it created this really weird dynamic.
But in that, that's versus, energetics, right?
Yeah.
So then he
versus
contracted,
somebody
he
who
contracted, you contracted.
Exactly. Versus somebody who, you know, you say, hey, you know what? Here's an extra, you know, 20, here's an extra 30. And they're like, oh, thank you so much. And then you watch them light up and you watch, you'll probably go to the next interaction or exchange, they'll be pleasantly surprised. And so it's like literally putting oneself in the field of allowing them to be pleasantly surprised. And like Natalie's saying, which is really important, is that whenever we have an expectation about the way that something's behaved, how long something's going to take, well, prepare for that expectation to be turned on its head and, you know, to be challenged. We might get it, but we might not.
But that core, you know, how he acted in that moment is when we lack something, when we feel like we're constantly in lack, we're actually lacking the trust that we are okay. Like we are okay if he got that extra 20 or not. He's still going to be okay. But he's sourced this idea that I need this money or I'm entitled to this money. And so I'm going to just assume I can take this money. And that's where we've been, I guess, led astray and conditioned to think that we are lacking. We don't have enough. We need more. We need to keep up with the economy. We need to make sure that we're always safe. We need to get insurance. We need to do this. And all of it is perpetuating this ultimately distrust within ourselves of being able to take care of our basic needs, which we all can. If you're watching this, you probably have some kind of house that you have situated. You know, like we actually have our basic needs. Almost everybody, I would assume, on this call met.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a big topic, isn't it? It really touches on a lot of deep, deep parts of people that without starting to look at, we might not even be clear why we have the beliefs and the energy and the attitude around money that we do.
Absolutely. And if you want to unpack it personally in a space where you're going to get personal attention in an intimate group environment, Natalie and I are running a workshop next Sunday, so June 11th.
Yeah.
I'm just going to show you because I want you to see that this is a real workshop and the link is in the description below, but it's called Women and Money. Now, are men invited to, or is it just women, Natalie?
I want to talk about women for now because I think that the things that we carry around money and asking for money or even believing that we're worth money is probably a little different. The way that we relate is a little different. And the reason that I want you on this call is because you have a very interesting way of reflecting. You've worked with a lot of women in their money. You've worked in their businesses and how they price themselves and how they represent their offers. And I think that a lot of what women struggle with comes back to self-worth and this permission to shine a bit more and to show up a bit more and to ask for a bit more from life. And I don't know if men always have that same approach. There's a little bit more of men sometimes like a goal. It's not as personal. They just, you know.
Yeah.
So
I think I was cracking a joke in this picture. You were just about to get the joke.
I was making a point. Yeah, you were making the joke, I'm pretty sure. And women, I think they also, this is a really big conversation because there's a lot of women who are teaching other women to make money, but there's this like still bada bing, bada boom, faster energy behind it that I don't think it really takes into account. Every woman needs to know what drives her, or what creates that feeling of inspiration to have more success, to create more financial abundance, because that's, it's driven by a very individual need.
Yeah. So it's almost like you're getting deeper into the bedrock or the foundation of what makes women tick. Whereas sometimes
what really lights you up, what perpetuates that feeling of abundance for you? What do you want to do with that money? What do you care about?
Yeah. And I think, you know, ultimately when you go deeper, you go further, or when you address deeper level, there's going to be greater longevity with that, right? Because there's going to be more fulfillment. There's going to be more to uncover that stands in the way of this thing, you know, versus anybody can learn a couple skills that are profitable. And, you know, a lot of the time that people, you know, I've worked a lot online and I've been quite successful at it and unsuccessful at it. But what I've seen though, is that anybody can learn skills that go out and make them a lot of money. Now, most people don't because they don't want to do those things. You know, no, people don't want to do the things because they're, in a lot of cases, they're pretty boring for people, and they're they're time consuming, they're repetitive, and they don't honor who we are. So we just basically write off this.
Sorry to interrupt, David. Is that okay?
Yeah, totally, go for it.
What I've noticed when you earn your money like that, it's almost like you've borrowed from this part of your life energetically. I see a lot of people who don't love what they do. Then they spend that money and that energy somehow trying to get back the energy they just lost. Do you know what I mean? So it's like the Friday night.
Exactly.
So you've created this amount coming towards you, but then you go towards other things to try and get back the energy that you just spent doing something that you don't love. So it's
I've experienced this. You know, I am a representation of wisdom because I can tell you all the things not to do.
I think we've all done a few of them, you know, like we've tried on different things, and it's about not being on either end and getting to closer to that balancing point. What is working for you? What can you change so that you can be in balance and then choose to expand? Choose to be playful. Choose to take risks even with your money. Try something, invest in something. But it's about knowing you're going to be okay at the core.
Yeah.
Right.
Because what Natalie was just saying, and I've been there before, in 2015, when I was working, there was an oil spill, and I basically was asked to go clean it up. And everybody in the office was asked, like all hands on deck. And I saw this as an opportunity. It was in the middle of winter in northern Alberta, Canada, minus 45. And I'm just like, I want to make a lot of money. So I went up there and I worked 100-hour weeks for a long period of time, like literally for 8 months. And within 3 months after that, because I was so unhappy doing that, that basically I was back to ground zero. And so, like Natalie said, sometimes when we tend to think in this way of I'll do anything to earn a lot of money, what ends up happening is that we're compromising in so many other areas of life that what did I end up doing is I ended up, you know, eating out all the time. I ended up drinking too much. I ended up like, you know, buying stupid things and wasting money. I ended up getting a bunch of speeding tickets because I was in a rush to get to this job. I got 9 like photo radar tickets in a row. That's a complete waste of money. That's a complete disrespect for it because essentially we're not fully embodied with what we're doing. There's only a small piece of us that's quite mentalized that's actually engaged with this because it's sort of chasing this carrot on a stick that's tied to our back.
Well, it also, there's also this, the energetics of money when we talk about it also has to take into account your nervous system. So whatever you're doing with your money, it's going to affect your nervous system, right? So if you're day trading, for example, and you've got big dollars going up and big, and if you're in a constant pounding coffee and like, it's really getting, it's like, that is not sustainable. You know, it's going to have a ripple effect on your overall well-being. And this is,
no one should day trade, by the way.
No, but
it's not actually day trading. It's night trading too.
100-hour weeks, you know, or the sitting at a desk when you want to be not doing that. You're sitting at a desk 50 hours of your, and this is why I think you and I are both share this passion to help people really click in and create a relationship with what do you want to do with your time? Like, what do you really want to do? Because work doesn't just need to be a transaction of money so that you can pay your bills. You can actually do work that you love and still receive the abundance and the support that you need for your lifestyle. You might need to adjust a few things for a while. You might need to stay open to what that looks like, but you can do that. That's very, very possible.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, what basically gave me permission in my life to step out of what I was doing was I was kind of in a similar situation back to 2015 in 2019, where I was working 2 weeks and each week was 90 hours. And I was in the middle of this like proposed mine site and I was doing environmental assessments. And it was just like contracted. Like I didn't have a say in what I was doing. It's like you show up, you jump how high. And then for the 2 weeks off, they would fly me anywhere. Well, yeah, that was disempowering. Half of my life was, but the 2 weeks off, I went to Hawaii and Costa Rica, Colorado, and I'm just like, man, imbalance. Like
the imbalance is there in David, right? So
I'm like, yeah, it's like literally like
man, but then I'm going to Hawaii and you can't find so the imbalance.
Right. So I'm like, well, that's the thing is like, I think if you're in it and you're just in it, you kind of like, you shut down and you brace and you keep going. But when you actually experience that contrast, it only took 3 shifts of that. Literally, it was like in a, I guess it would be a 12-week period. By the third one, I'm like, screw this. I don't want to go back to that site anymore. And I quit. And I just quit. I didn't have a plan or anything, but my body just said, it's time to quit. And I made myself a promise is that I would only do things that I truly loved and I truly found my passion in. And since that time, I had to walk away from a lot of things that could have made me a lot more money sooner instead to basically find this other path of doing what I loved and allowing the money the time it needed to show up without that expectation.
Which I fully believe in. I think that we all need to remember that we have different timelines for these big events in our lives, whether it's we're supposed to find that thing that we click into that's our purpose. We have different timelines. Just because you're 22 doesn't mean you should know what it is. And we have different timelines for when our money starts. We really take the time to get into alignment with a healthy way of attracting and working with it and holding it. Some people can do it at 23 through TikTok. Most of us have had a different relationship about skills, value, trading our time, what we want, what we value, you know, where we put ourselves in what environments. That's a learning curve. And so you're never late. I like to think of it like that, right? So a lot of the conditions that we have been taught by the world, urgency, rushed, and ultimate makes a lot of people take on things that they don't ideally want to be doing.
Yeah.
Which has a big ripple effect on all of us, right?
Whoever makes a great decision when they're under urgent pressure?
Not often. Yeah. Yeah.
Probably less than if people get to reflect and relax and contemplate, actually by a huge margin, I'd say.
But the money is like such a creative thing. We need to remember that there's many ways to make money, period. So if I say that and someone hears that and thinks, no, there isn't, that's a belief. You've got a belief that's actually limiting how you show up and what you think is possible. So money definitely is going to show you where in your life you've chosen to think certain things, or it's just a byproduct of what you were taught a long time ago. Money is everywhere. Everybody has some. It's changed. There's lots of possibility with how you interact with money, what that looks like, how you create it.
And if they want to explore this possibility, would attending our workshop be a good idea for that?
I love to see that women start to release things that are holding them back from, one, more enjoyment with money, two, letting go of some of their own limitations with what's possible. But that doesn't mean we go chasing or grabbing it. So it's really this like healthier, playful, more curious relationship. And that, I feel, makes a woman really spark up. I think that women and money has the potential to be such a fun, more engaging, more satisfying relationship.
So release limiting beliefs, have more fun.
We talk about limiting beliefs. We talk about your version of success, right? What is your version of success? Yours might be different than mine. Mine might be different than my friends, you know?
Yeah. I like that you emphasize healthy. Like, that's the thing, is that doing this should increase your health, right?
Absolutely.
It shouldn't be something that actually depletes you in any way. It should actually mm-hmm. make you more complete. It should enrich that life force.
Inspire you, right? It has the ability to inspire you, your lifestyle, and what you want to do with it, what you want to create with it.
Well, thank you very much, Natalie, for hopping on the show today, for having this 70-minute chat with me about very, very deep and frankly not talked about enough themes around money. And mm-hmm. if you're watching this and you want to explore Natalie's work further, I will be actually with her in this workshop on June 11th. The link is in the description below. And it's mostly geared towards women, but over time we will also offer
we will. Because I think it's also really helpful to know how the opposite sex sees it and interacts with it. I think that that's really helpful. First, we kind of need to do the individual work.
Totally. Well, thank you very much for joining the show. And I hope you all got lots out of this. I'm going to be back now. This is healing and I can start to do these shows again. So I'm going to be back doing the podcast in another 2 weeks. Take care for now. Have yourself a healthy, abundant, and playful 2 weeks. I'll see you soon.
This is Octave Leap. Innovation, regeneration, and human optimization.